WB4MM portable. WB4MM portable.
WDML, that's KL4NUE, over.
KL4NUE, hey, this is Mike. Talked to you a couple of days ago. I was the guy from Florida.
What's up, man? What's going on? Where are you now?
We're in Spartanburg. Just checking out, see if I could hit this repeater, which I seem to be able to do. Yeah, it's WB4MM. You're headed to or from Liberty.
I'm in Liberty again. It's time to come check on my family member. I kind of watch over him a little bit. So I come up here 2 or 3 days a week and just keep an eye on him and just stay down here at the cabin after I spend some time on him, make sure he's good to go. Did you enjoy your trip up in Pisgah?
It's okay. I always enjoy going up there. I was kind of surprised the campground wasn't open, but it's probably too early for that. But, hey, was it windy up in Liberty today?
Sure, it sure was. I'd say 5 to 10 out of northeast, maybe. Yeah, just enough to get what little bit of pollen's left. Get everything stirred up and get me all hot and bothered.
Asheville, and I cannot recommend I-26 to anybody out of Asheville. What a mess. Yeah, as soon as we got out of Asheville down around Hendersonville, the wind was just blowing. Just, you could feel the wind hit the car and shake it. It was just blowing so hard.
Y'all headed back home, or y'all stopping in Spartanburg?
At a hotel in Spartanburg, it's we still got like another 7 hours back to Daytona Beach, so we're gonna hit the road fairly early in the morning and try to get there before the traffic. Crunch time in Jacksonville, we have to go through Jacksonville and try to get there before 5 o'clock.
So you gonna? If I got this right, so you should probably go down 26 to hit 95. Is that correct?
That's the approach. If you are correct, we hit 20, go down 26 to 95.
Some mic issues there. I didn't get any of that. You were just on off, on off, on off. I can't hear you, Mike, but just in case you can hear me, if you're staying in Spartanburg, that means you're going to be approximately an hour and 30 to an hour and 40 minutes out from Columbia. And Columbia traffic is really bad on 26, I'd say from 8 o'clock to about 10 o'clock. It's usually at a standstill for 5 to 6 miles right there at 26 and I-20. So, you know, you might want to plan accordingly. You're gonna be really frustrated because that should put you in Columbia right around that time. Last station, this is KO4NUE. Say again, over.
Well, now, this is KO4CF. You copy?
RCM, this is KO4NUE out of Liberty. Go ahead.
Checking in.
Going
on the repeater.
You picket fencing on me a little bit. What's, whereabouts you located?
Headed down 85 in Spartanburg, my little HD in my window mount struggles getting to Caesar's Head.
So I'm along for the ride with you till you get home.
Andrew, how you doing this evening?
Good, bud. Pretty good. I got a base station in Campobello. I'm a relatively new ham. Been on the air for, I don't know, maybe a week and a half. But retired military. I did communication for the military for 27 years, and I got a base station in Campobello and got a portable up here in Liberty, South Carolina, right on the 12 Mile River. And just out in the cabin, enjoying this beautiful weather, and just enjoying the day.
Yeah, it's starting to look like we might get some storms this evening. I don't know. I hadn't checked the weather, but it's definitely looking a little dull now.
It's been real windy today. I guess 5 to 10 out of the northeast, and pollen's been. And just enough to get the pollen stirred up and get me all frustrated with my allergy issues. But other than that, you know, how much further you got to go before you get to the house?
10 more miles. Well, if I hit 26, then it's just a straight shot until I get up towards the Inman exit.
Let's see. Well, I'm not too awful far from Inman when I'm back at the house. But I'm right between, actually I'm in Little Chicago, I guess probably 4 miles from Gowansville and probably about 7 miles from Greer and 9 miles from Inman, so you kind of triangulate from that, I guess.
Talking about, is that there? I want to say it's 357, but I'm not sure if that's the right road or not. Kind of in the back way between where New Cut and 11, kind of in between those two highways.
You're exactly right. I'm exactly 1 mile from the Briar Patch on off of 357, actually on Mount Lebanon Road.
Up there and right inside Lincoln Tron. I don't know why the heck they want to move there, but you know, it is what it is, their choice, right? They want to live on a golf course, that's fine. But well, were you the one that had the 991? I got it on my head that you found like the guy I was talking to.
That's correct. I've been waiting on that thing I waited on it for about 103 days and got it in the mail yesterday. And got it set up at the shop in Campobello, but I'm on this little 2980 in Liberty. And as it stands right now, I like this 2980 a whole lot better than I do that 991 because there's just so many buttons to push.
I ended up with the 7300 ICOM. I was torn between it and the 991. I think the slightly bigger screen size was the only difference. That kind of put me over because I already had the 2 meter 70 centimeter, but I think it'll be a nice rig once you get used to it and figure out what everything does. I think you're going to love it.
The last night I went down to the shop and I spent, I don't know, 30, 40 minutes, I guess, trying to program my repeaters in, and spent all that time looking them up and putting the PL tones in and CTSS and everything else, and I thought, okay, I got all my repeaters in, now all I got to do is just switch my multi-button and I can go in between repeaters, and evidently I didn't push the right button, and it didn't store any of it in memory, so I just got frustrated with it and said, hey, I gotta head on. I'll check on it later when I can figure it out. But you know, it's just so frustrating having to learn again. But that's okay.
Well, I'm sure once you get it down, though, you'll get it. Then when you finally get on the HF bands, because I believe you had your technicians right. I think once you get on the HF, then you get to learn all the filters and everything else, and how to adjust for all the other noises, static crashes, and everything else. It's a lot of fun, and it takes forever to learn it all. I'm still learning my 7300.
Feeling that this hobby is something that I guess it's a lot like my wife. You constantly spending money on it and figure it out. manipulate it just enough to be kind of happy a little bit, I guess.
Bad. I've spent a fair share of money on it already, and I've only been in it a little over a year. And I think the good thing is you can dabble in so many different areas. I mean, it's just kind of whatever suits you. You can work digital modes if you want to do that, or you can talk on repeaters, or however you want to do it. That's the nice part about it.
I got a 2 meter, 70 centimeter antenna, and I haven't even jumped up on the 440 yet. I'm just kind of happy with 2 meters, and you know, I'm just gonna hang out here till I decide I want to move on with something else. So that's kind of where I'm at, I guess.
At a decent time. I mean, if you decide to try out the HF band, you know, 10 meters will be open here and there. Depends on the day. You can, I think one website I use is called DXEat. And on the right side, you'll see like a little heat map. Put in your phone, it'll show you which bands are being talked on for like South America, North America. Start seeing 10 meters light up, and you can kind of get on there and play around with the HF digital modes, or get on there and do single five bands and do that.
I'll play around with it and try to figure it out. I'm just trying to get a little bit more confident on the radio and figure out what all the buttons are and what all to do first. And because I try to learn too many things too fast, it just gets frustrating in a real hurry.
You've got a lot of radio to learn, so that's what you're doing for that. But yeah, I kind of did a little different. I had the little mobile radio stuff in the house. Did that for a little while, and then I finally invested in the 7300, and man, it was pretty exciting. I was interested in the digital mode, FPA, stuff like that. When 10 meters would open up, I got a taste of it. It was close, and like an even, it was dead, and I just knew then I had to get my general light.
And that's where I'm gonna have to end up, because I just, not a whole lot you can do on the technician side. So I've been studying a little bit here and there, and joined the Thermal Belt Amateur Radio Club. I've been trying, and I got my dues in the mail. I hadn't received my payment yet, so technically I'm not a member, but it's will be in a couple of days, I guess. But I got a feeling that's where I'm gonna end up.
Highly recommend it. It's going to open up more frequencies. You know, the test really wasn't that bad. I ended up taking it online through hamstudy.org or something, and I passed it. I think I only ended up studying a month, but you learn a good bit on playing around with the 2 meter, and if you decide to do like 10 meters, you'll learn a lot already. Or even do your general.
Hey, boss man, you're starting to picket fence pretty bad. I'm losing you in and out on the repeater, so I hope I was able to stay with you long enough to get you close enough to home. But listen, man, it was a pleasure talking to you again, and I'll pick you up next time. This is KL4NUE out of Liberty, South Carolina, 73, and I'm clear with you, boss. Have a great day.
Good one. It's been a pleasure talking to you. 73, this is KO4CEF, and I will be clear.
Or DJW Mobile. From EWA, W4DJW. 4DJW Mobile.
Two wages fly today, Dave, and 4DJC.
Today, Jerry, get one of those wind bursts, you can land going 5 mph backwards.
McAllister's on Concrete Road, and saw a, I don't know what it was a high wing, might have been a tri-pacer. The wingspan didn't look too wide on it, but it was coming into the Greenville, and it was kind of wobbly coming over Concrete Road.
But the cemetery yesterday in C-130 was doing touch and goes downtown, I suppose, because he kept coming around and around and around. That thing, you don't realize how big they are. He was really low. But you don't realize how big they are. That thing, that airplane's bigger than my house. That thing is enormous.
Actually, it was the guy, the personnel manager, when I was working in Springs, his brother was a, I guess he's North Carolina Air Guard, and he flew C-130s. And he was telling me some of the stuff they did with him. He said, they'll do anything. He said, when you're coming in on them, he said, it looked like you're not going very fast, but you got to remember, you're about 170. He said, it just didn't look like they're going that fast, but he said, they have all kinds of stuff in them. And it was just, it was a workhorse for sure.
That big, it's hard to tell how fast they're going. They're just too big to tell. If I come up missing, that's because it was my turn at the window. But I was at the Winston-Salem, I think it was, air show. I think it was in Winston-Salem. I can't remember where. When a B-1 came by, they flew by. They didn't land, but they made low passes, and they swept their wings back. And when they got time for them to leave, that thing was enormous, too. I don't know if you've ever seen a B-1 up close. I mean, flying by you up close. But when it came time to punch out, they came down the runway really slow, and they poured the coals to that thing. And I'm telling you, within 3 seconds, they punched a hole in the cloud that was over 3,000 feet up in the air. I mean, it was just a matter of a few handful of seconds from just putting right down the runway to out of there. And those things are enormous. How that's the power that it takes to make that happen, and to be able to control that power as accurately as they do, is it just boggles my mind. W4DJW.
I haven't seen one on the ground up close. They wouldn't let us get very close to it, but I've seen one or two of them. I've seen them flying way over. We used to go to the NASCAR race. I usually did have one or a football game. I've seen them fly pretty low over, but they didn't board a goal to it like they could, though, because there's so many people in the crowd. But those things are enormous. They are huge, and they are extremely fast. My first cousin's husband, he flew a B-58 Hustler in the Air Force, and that Hustler was fast too for his time. And I didn't realize, they were carrying. He told me he's still living. She passed away some years ago, but he must be in his 80s now, mid 80s. But he told me, he said, we were flying live deeks on those things. A lot of people didn't know it, but he said, we were sure flying. And I said, good grief. I said, man, what if you crashed? He said, it would have been a problem.
And says that was my time at the window, but I got most of it before that. But like you said, that's like moving two houses one time with those, the engines and the power and the. You know, when I was a kid, we used to go out to the drag strip and down to the one in Commerce, Georgia. We'd go out there, and back then they had those rocket cars, a car with a rocket engine strapped underneath or inside of it. And one of the things you try to do is stand out there close to the fence as you could and hold your hands down by your side so that, and not grab your ears. You know, it shakes your whole body when they're taking off, when they're rumbling and they're taking off. Just the feeling, the vibrations just go through you. I tried to do that one time, tried to hold my girlfriend's arms down by her side. And I couldn't do that. I had to let go of her arms to grab my ears. She had to do the same thing. But that B-1, it puts those rocket cars to shame. I'm telling you, it's like it's got half a dozen of those things on it, all going at the same time. Pretty wild. I would love to see those things in real life. Just can't get enough of it.
I had those rocket cars at Commerce. I remember going there years ago. I used to go down to the Yellow River, too, when it was still operating before they had that... But they did twister crash, kill all those people, and shut it down, basically. But we used to go to a lot of them over the years in the Opportunity Commerce. But I don't remember seeing a rocket car there. That'd been cool. But I don't think I've ever seen one other than just in a YouTube video or film or something like that. I did see Tommy Ivo we had run his showboat one time down somewhere. I think it was at Rockingham. It's been years ago, many years ago, when it was back in the 60s. And I think it's Rockingham. Might have been somewhere else. So we're going different places to see him. And he had a, I don't know if you're familiar with that or not. He was, he had a four-engine dragster. And it was four-wheel drive, I think. But that thing was, I mean, it was fast, but it was heavy. And I know you've seen Little Red Wagon and all funny cars and all that sort of stuff. That was a lot of fun back in the 60s. You don't see anything like that nowadays. They just, they go too fast, I suppose, to enjoy.
Milton, who used to be on here all the time, KI4MSA, I think him and his wife go to those, they still go to those things, and he posts pictures on Facebook every now and then of them. I don't know that they do what they used to do back in the 70s. Back in the 70s, like you said, they were wild. Four big block V8s on a single car frame, or a single, what they call those that have the really long rail car, I can't remember what they call those things. Anyway, those guys had some imagination, and how they got those engines all pulling at the same time and not fighting against each other, you know, one going slow and the other one having to pull that one, and that one making the other one go slower. How they coordinated all that, I don't know. Those guys were good. Those guys were really good.
A lot of privateers had some really good ideas. I know, I can't remember the guy's name, it ran the Twister now, but he passed away a few years ago, but I think it, he was, I heard an interview with him some years back, and he was saying, you know, he never did talk much about what happened, but there's always some, you know, some suspicion that somebody walked out on the drag strip and caught a sheep when it opened and drug him and pulled him off the racetrack into the grab. I don't think he ever got over it. I think he killed 16. I think it was the worst one in U.S. racing history, I think. I don't know, 15 or 16, a bunch of them. My cousin, at my age, he passed away now, but he was just fixing to head out to Vietnam, and he was down there when it happened. He was very lucky that he was on the other side of the drag strip when it happened, but he saw it, and he said it's as bad as anything he saw, fighting in Vietnam. He said it's just carnage everywhere. I don't know how many people got injured, but it was a terrible accident. But, you know, those days, Dave, they didn't have fences on the strips in some of those places. And certainly, they were rough. People had all kinds of, you know, none of the cars were, well, yeah, they were all NHRA sanctioned, supposedly, but, you know, they didn't have inspections like they do these days, I know.
They were so cutting edge, or not intuitive, but innovative. They were so innovative because they didn't have all the rules, right? They were allowed to. I remember when one of the race car drivers filled his roll bar with nitrous oxide. Do you remember that? At the end of the race, he used too much of it. And they realized, they said, there is no way that car could kick in there like that, that fast. He's got to be doing something illegal. And they finally tore his car down and found the pressure valve in the roll cage. Do you remember that?
Yeah, I remember hearing about that. Smokey Unick, when he was building cars, he just said he'd find something. I don't know if you've ever read his biography or... Now, I know you remember it well, but you know, he could take the car, he could do anything with it. He would just find all kinds of things in rule books where he said, "Well, if it doesn't say you can't do it, I'm gonna do it."
Yeah, that's the way a lot of them looked at it, right? If you can find a way to get an advantage over the competitor, have at it. But I don't know. Maybe there was a rule that said you have to use. You know, I think there was a gasoline that they all had to use, the same gasoline, even back then, back in those days, which typically they didn't have a whole lot of rules like that. It was the first one that crosses the wet finish line wins, and that was the only rule there was.
Yeah, get back to the air. aircraft. I was reading in, I think it's Spectrum Monitor, a little magazine that, yeah, I think they do still do it out of North Carolina. I get it. I think it comes out every couple of months. It's just a digital deal. And that's where they're going to have Blue Angels in Rome, Georgia, sometime this fall. That's my first time the Blue Angels are going to be in Georgia in a long, long time, I think, Dave. That'd be a great air show in the fall in that part of the state.
Not too long ago, I remember somebody talking about them at the Greenville Airport, I believe it was. It's either them or the Thunderbirds. I can't remember which one it was. Or maybe it was those Canadians. Anyway, I'm about to back it in the driveway, getting lunch. It's been a long day. I'm hungry. Ready to eat. Enjoy the ride. W4DJW.
See you, Dave. Great talking to you. Enjoy your lunch or supper or whatever it is this time of day. But talk to you later, M4DJC. Clear.
Hey, Chuck says listening.
WD4MM, portable listener.